Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today, we look at how film portrays mental health conditions, which films get it right and which not so much. Joining us, psychiatrist Mark Whaley. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Indy.
Psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And film critic Tim Miller. Hi, Tim. Welcome back.
Hey, Mindy.
So I think one of the things before we start talking about some of the films is maybe talk about, you know, why media representation matters, some of the benefits, even for some of the films that get it wrong, at least it gets you talking, right? So what are some of the things that are the benefits, I guess, of portraying, you know, I guess one of the things I would think right off the bat is we always talk about the stigma with mental health issues. And in a lot of these films, some people see themselves, right? And they go, wow, you know, and this person, you know, has made a recovery or, you know, I'm not the only one kind of a thought. So, Mark, what are some of the things we get, the benefits?
I think the main benefit comes from, as humans, we understand things, events, experiences, in terms of stories. We don't understand them in terms of lectured facts. Or kind of the style of a documentary, which you could get the same information across, but with stories in which we can identify, like you just said, with the characters, understand what forces, what drives them in different ways. That's a personal, really the person in watching the film has a personal experience, which is absent from any kind of lecture or, you know, not necessarily any lecture or any other kind of means to communicate something that you're not familiar with daily in and out. That's really the benefit.
Empathy and connection.
Empathy, yeah. And connection and experiencing, really experiencing it real. I think that's the it's basically a human trait. Films I guess you could say shows too, give us that. Yeah. And we've had it in history for a long time.
I think maybe one of the points that, you know, Mark is making is that when data or information is attached to feelings, it has much more sticking power, right, and much easier to relate to. Mm-hmm. And even though a documentary may be beautiful and it may be the photography may be amazing, when you actually feel something watching a story, it's so much more powerful, so much more memorable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
I would say, though, that at least some documentaries still, the best documentaries do tell stories also, though.
Yeah,
that it isn't just, maybe that's the difference between a documentary that kind of leaves you cold and one that's very powerful, you know, like Harlan County, USA, about coal miners, union, you know, forming unions and the fight that they had, you know, it tells a story. And so it is powerful. I totally agree with what you're saying about, for the most part, but I just wanted to sort of defend documentary filmmakers, at least the ones, because they tell stories too.
Yeah.
No, Tim, my octopus teacher, which is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. I haven't been able to eat octopus since I saw that documentary.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Because you become empathic with this incredible animal who clearly seems to have some feelings and be, you know, relate to its surroundings almost as if it were human. And that's a great example of a documentary that elicits tremendous feelings.
Right. Yeah.
I think another benefit of films, whether it's, on the best or the worst list, is it starts conversations, right? You can go, oh, that is so not reality, or, oh, I know, you know, it's like it gets you talking about whatever the mental illness that might be depicted in the film. And again, raising awareness too, right? So you're talking about it, you're raising awareness about it, whether you're saying it's good or not so good. Inspiration and hope is another one. You see yourself in a film and you see somebody, on that road to recovery, and it might inspire you to you know, get help that you might need. So there's lots of benefits to these portrayals, even if they're not so accurate. One of the things that I found really interesting in looking some of this up was there can be a film that got the on the best list, right? Best, you know, film for showing a particular mental health disorder, or it's also on the worst list. And one that, and I was surprising, A Beautiful Mind was one that was on both lists. And I loved that movie. And I know a lot of people did. It was an Academy Award winner. And this was based on a true story, right? And it really showed the struggle that Mr. Nash had with schizophrenia. But I think the criticism of the film wasn't that part of it. It was the hallucinations he had with his roommate, right? And then, Mark, you're nodding your head. Because in real life, are they not that consistent? Or what was that criticism?
Yeah, the criticism was mainly the visual hallucinations. As if he sees the people that are tormenting him in his mind. He's definitely paranoid, which was the main symptom of his psychosis. Generally, people with schizophrenia don't really have visual hallucinations. They can have them, but they'd be more fleeting and disorganized and brief and not very meaningful. This in the movie, the visual hallucinations, the things that went on in his mind, was portrayed as if it was reality. Mm-hmm. The twist was revealed toward the end of the film.
Right.
So sort of. You know, this was Hollywood drama.
It's Hollywood. Yeah. You got to tell the story. Right. They can. And for folks who don't know, John Nash was a Nobel laureate in economics. And so this follows this mathematics stuff that, you know, you see him in this big room. He thinks he's working for the government and, you know, all of that. That film I just thought was so beautifully done. What did you think about that film, Tim?
It's been a while since I've seen it. I liked it a lot when I saw it. Of course, I'm looking at it. Mindy and I were talking before the show about this, where I don't have the expertise that Mark and Jonathan have, obviously. So, like, when I'm tougher on baseball movies because
you
know
it,
about
yeah.
baseball, so yeah. I can sort of smell the BS, whereas a lot of stuff would just go past me. And whereas you guys, it could. You know, maybe ruin a movie for you, where like A Beautiful Mind, where you go, boy, it's got so much right. Why are they embellishing it with this stuff that just
makes it wrong? Yeah,
you know. So it's interesting.
And I was saying to Tim, I mean, that's true of anything, right? When you know, I was saying remember that TV show WKRP in Cincinnati, and they never wore headphones. I'm like, that's in reality, you wear headphones, you get feedback, right? Yeah. So there's always something depending on, you know, what your area of expertise is. But what are your thoughts on that? When you guys watch a movie that's got some, you know, mental health issues in it, are you more critical or can you take off your doctor hat?
I really appreciated A Beautiful Mind in part because of its drama that was wrong. Mm-hmm. For instance, to me, I really took away the image and the experience of this man at the end of the film when after he's been on some medication. And we can talk about the need for medication and the resistance to it. But after he's been on some medication and he gives a speech in acceptance of his Nobel Prize, he sees the filmmaker presents him seeing these people that were his enemies in his mind, his paranoid enemies. He sees them, but he doesn't react to them. And that's the... key about successful psychiatric treatment. Mm-hmm. The person might still have some of the same experiences, but it doesn't take over them. They don't react to them. They don't have to defend themselves. They don't have to attack somebody as a paranoid person might, because of what they're believing is about to be harmful to themselves. They're just
I think that compared to the distortions presented in many other movies, I think the distortions depicted in A Beautiful Mind are actually relatively subtle for most people who'd be watching. I was just watching until I couldn't watch anymore this new TV show, The Monsters, about the Menendez brothers. And the way that his therapist is depicted, the only thing that's accurate in there is that the guy's wearing an Argyle sweater, which I personally tend to wear during the winter time as well. So I could at least relate to that. But otherwise, you know, he does a tremendous disservice to anybody who worries about the confidentiality, which is a pretty basic basic concept in therapy. This guy does a tremendous disservice, you know, to that notion. And then, of course, there's always One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which has become, you know, really problematic for any of those of us who have to talk with a patient about having a consultation for electroconvulsive therapy. And the way that, I mean, I wish I had a nickel for every time I've had to say to people, you know, the way Jack Nicholson presents himself in that movie is really not the way it happens in real life. And that, you know, these treatments can be life-saving, blah, blah, blah. But so, I mean, Beautiful Mind, I think we're talking about it because it really was a fabulous movie, but I think the distortions are relatively minor compared to so many other portrayals.
Right. You know,
so nowadays, I don't think that Jack Nicholson would have gotten ECT or, God forbid, a lobotomy like he did in that
movie. Well, it's not real.
It was really about a police state that they depicted.
One thing I was going to say, when and Jonathan, when you have patients like, you should ask him to read Kitty Dukakis's book Shock. Have you read it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I haven't read it. But
she
I am aware of it.
So honest and forthcoming in that, and how that really saved her life. So you it's an excellent book. Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. I'm wondering if there's a film that portrayed a mental illness condition that spoke to you. We'd love to hear about it. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we're going to have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're looking at how film portrays mental health conditions with psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, psychiatrist Mark Whaley, and film critic Tim Miller. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd like to talk about a film that really struck you, 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Have you guys seen Silver Linings Playbook? You have,
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but Amy's recommending it, so I have to go see it. But this is the story of a man with bipolar disorder and his relationship with a woman who has her own mental health challenges. And when you were talking about medications, Mark, and there's a scene in that movie where they're talking about, hey, have you ever, you know, taken such a, going back and forth about the different medications that they've taken. And was that a realistic scene? Is that, would those, all those medications that they both listed, be medications they would have been prescribed?
As I recall, yes. But what really hit me about that portrayal of bipolar disorder, you could see that the woman loved him, and he didn't feel it in his family, or he didn't feel it earlier, regardless of whether he had bipolar disorder or not. And but the bipolar disorder prevented him, the symptoms of it, the paranoia, the agitation, the aggression, prevented him from relating to her. And we saw him earlier in the film where he did take medication for a short time, and he was 100% different. I guess the romantic part of myself wanted him, if he, dummy, just take medication and you can have a life, you can have a relationship. And to tell you the truth, I've felt that. I haven't said it like that before with patients, but it's true.
Yeah.
If only they could shake off the mental illness long enough to change their brain chemistry, they could have a different life. It's not ideal, but it's it really, the medicines are effective for the most part. And it's just a shame that so big a part of major mental illness is resisting treatment, resisting the recommendations. Just about every time you read of some a person becoming psychotic and killing their parents or killing their wife, or we have this case that's going to be heard in Plymouth, the woman who killed her three children.
Right.
That's coming up. If only they stuck with the treatment, and the tragedy would not be there.
But isn't it true that sometimes it's finding that right medication too, right?
I mean, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not an easy task. It's not a straightforward task. It is a process of finding it, but usually you can. The vast majority of time you can, and the quality of life is measurably better and appreciably better to everybody, the family and co-workers, whatever, once the medication is doing its thing. It takes some time, and it takes bearing with some side effects that they're not ideal. The medicines are far from ideal.
Yeah. What did you think about Silver Linings Playbook, Tim? Did you like that movie?
You know, it's been a while since I've seen it. I was trying to remember. I remember not loving the film, and I can't remember exactly why. I liked the performances a lot. Of course, again, I wasn't looking at it with the same perspective as Mark and Jonathan, but
Bradley Cooper,
and Jennifer Lawrence, and I like them both a lot, and she won an Oscar, I think, for it, and I thought she was very good. I can't remember exactly what. There was something that irritated me about the film, and to be honest, I can't remember exactly what it was.
Couldn't have been that bad, right?
No, it was like, to me, it was like a 2.5 star movie.
Oh,
but I can't, which are really. Those are the toughest ones to write about.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
I think it's tricky when you have people who are that good looking struggling so much in life. There's something that doesn't quite work. I mean, how can Jennifer Lawrence have a mental health problem?
Right.
I mean, really?
Good point.
You know. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
So is there a film or films that come to mind that you just, you mentioned that the TV movie Monsters, Jonathan. Is there something that you just went, oh, this is a terrible portrayal. What's on the terrible list for you?
Well, that would be one of them. That would certainly be the one of the most recent. Boy, you know, there have been plenty. You know, what comes to mind more so are ones that have been really, I think, very good portrayals.
All right, go ahead. Let's go with good portrayals.
I think Good Will Hunting, for example, in which Robin Williams, if I'm remembering correctly, Robin Williams played a therapist for an MIT student. I thought that was really very, just so well done. And maybe that has something to do with who Robin Williams was and his experience with his own mental health issues was certainly one. And also Ordinary People.
That's one of your favorites, too.
It is.
Yeah. Yes. So I'd rather have Tim talk about them because he probably has more indelible, recollections of these than I do.
Tim, you Ordinary People. That was one of your
favorite. I love Ordinary People. Still do. And at one time it was my favorite movie. I think for me, it rang true as far as not, you know, and. I tend to drift into I don't know what the difference is between depression and clinical depression. I guess probably it's like just literally have you been diagnosed, but I tend to get a little depressed
from time to
my
time.
Wife would tell you and it just rang true to me it's about a teenager who has his older brother died and he's the survivor. So he's got survivor's guilt, but he also, has attempted suicide and was, I believe institutionalized for a while. There's like a scene at a McDonald's. So he's on a date and he's telling this girl about how it's like you're looking in this hole of darkness and you're sort of falling into it and you can't help yourself. And it just really kind of rang true to me.
That's right.
And like you were saying, I think Mark might've been saying as far as where, you know, as that when you see a portrayal where you can relate, I know what that's like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, it's not just me.
Yeah.
That it's helpful to know that.
Yeah. Mark, what about for you? What movies can you think of that were you thought did a great job?
The one that comes to my mind is The Sopranos.
The Sopranos.
Oh, wow.
The Sopranos. And we, you know, we, that went over, you know, years, a number of seasons. But I always thought that Dr. Malfi, I think it was, the name, did a good job with a very damaged person. And she obviously formed, at least it was portrayed, a therapeutic relationship with somebody who that didn't come easy to.
Yeah.
A trusting relationship. He was just the opposite. Aggression came first. And so that was a challenge. And I thought it was pretty realistic in terms of effective therapy.
Wow. And
the therapist was emotionally involved, but she still remained it. Had a professional or a distance, a realistic distance set up so that she didn't fall into some traps that some other therapists might have with a character disorder, like Tony Soprano.
Mm.
So I was happy about that.
Yeah,
one.
That's a tough this patient is probably, to have. Yeah,
this is probably a good time to remind everybody that today is actually the first day of second season of the TV show Shrinking.
What is that? I don't know that one.
It's actually a very good show. It's I think the best acting role that I've seen Harrison Ford ever in.
Oh.
I've never really been a huge Harrison Ford fan, but he plays a therapist in this TV show.
Wow.
And his co-star is it Jason? I can't think of his last name, who is actually the main kind of character.
Is it Bateman? Jason Bateman?
No. It's not Jason Bateman,
begins with a
J. But anyway, today is the opening. It's the first time it's available to see on streaming. I can't remember if it's on, you know, Amazon Prime or Apple TV, but it's out there, and it's the first season. I thought was very, very good.
Wow. Jason Segel.
Oh, Siegel, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Thank goodness for Google, right?
Yeah. Can
yeah.
I ask? Did you watch In Treatment with Gabriel Byrne? That was, I believe, on HBO.
Yeah, that was a little too close to home for me. I just felt like I was a busman's holiday.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I remember that, and it was engaging. It was. It was meaningful.
Yeah.
And I don't think they distorted. Anything major about the psychotherapy interaction.
All right, let's talk about one that's on the not so good list, Psycho. Now everybody's seen that. Remember that movie from 1960, 60. I think, yeah. And this I'm not even sure, like, you know, what his mental health condition is. Is it just multiple personality disorder? Is it schizophrenia? I mean, we got a lot rolled into there, but I guess the disservice with this one is it makes you think that everybody with some kind of psychosis is a killer, right? And that's so not true, right?
Absolutely. That did a disservice, at least from that standpoint. Dramatic wise, it was quite effective,
right?
So
you look around before you get in the shower.
No kidding.
Right. But otherwise, you know, that it's still you still could learn about I guess you'd have to call it pathological grief. Clearly very attached to his mom, mother, and that drove his psychosis. So you can learn some things about what kind of things trigger psychosis.
Do you think in the case of Psycho that sometimes, like, somebody will do something in a movie that's not very smart, and then the movie is criticized because there are copycat people who will do the something that isn't smart, and you think, well, you know, what are you supposed to do just because there's people that are kind of doing stupid things that you can't ever do, show people doing something stupid for fear that people will repeat the repeat it. Do you think that, like a movie like Psycho, where maybe they get some of the things wrong, that it's like, well, okay, but clearly not everybody that has that sort of anything related to that kind of an illness, that they're not necessarily a killer, that
they're not going to see that and copy it. Is what you're
saying. Or in that case, or even to make the assumption that everybody who has mental illness is going to become a serial killer.
Right.
You know, I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, you're talking about contagion, basically, and any movie that depicts violence can precipitate contagion. What was his name? The guy who shot President Reagan. He wanted to impress Jodie Foster.
Right.
You know, if the person is vulnerable to catching a crazy virus, I guess you could say, then yes, but they're already vulnerable. And those would be the type of people that would, you know, do something stupid because they happen to see it in a movie.
Well, you know, when you become a resident in psychiatry, one of the first things that I remember being taught was that you should never be shy about asking somebody if they have thoughts of suicide. That nobody ever committed suicide because somebody asked them if they felt suicidal, because there's this sort of like maybe myth out there that if you ask somebody about it, if you bring up the subject, you're planting a seed which they might then act on. And that's what I'm reminded of here. I don't think there's ever been any evidence that people will act in an aggressive or crazy way because they simply because they saw somebody else act in an aggressive or crazy way.
Right.
Yeah. Another movie I wanted to bring up, Fatal Attraction. Good movie, but what's the lesson here? Don't cheat on your wife, right?
At least.
Boy, oh boy, did she have some issues.
Or if you're going to cheat, choose somebody a little bit more stable.
That was an interesting movie.
Oh my God. Well, you know, that portrayed the obsessiveness that can develop in relationships.
Yeah.
And how controlling that obsessiveness is. You know, we hear it all the time when we read about or hear about domestic violence cases.
Mm-hmm. Stalking. Stalking.
There's aspects of that, that kind of pathological obsessiveness and need to control. It's a real phenomenon, and that can be a dangerous phenomenon.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to talk about a film that struck you, that had portrayed a mental health condition. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right. Little Miss Sunshine is on this list of movies that it says portray a positive and insightful manner. I thought that movie was I found it disturbing. Did you see that, Little Miss Sunshine?
I loved it.
You did?
Yeah.
Because you like those dark movies.
Yeah.
All right, this was a comedy drama that follows a dysfunctional family's road trip to a children's beauty pageant. It says it touches on themes of depression and self-worth, showing the importance of family support. I don't know if I would you call that family? Did either of you see it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 What did you think about it?
I loved it.
You did?
Yeah.
I'm in the minority.
Yeah, it was very engaging, that's for sure. But that was another one that displayed the obsessiveness of this time in the mother to have her daughter win beauty pageants, mm-hmm. the daughter being 4 or 5 years old or 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And just the intrusiveness and the way she owned her daughter's being. You know, it made you itch to see that going on, see that robbery, really, robbery of personhood that the mother was pursuing. And you know, she was in a social group that did this. You know, there's a social outlet, so to speak.
And Alan Arkin was brilliant in that movie. Brilliant.
I was thinking, he did not do her any favors teaching her that dance.
Yeah, but, well, I wonder, though, because, I mean, one of the big themes in the movie is about, you know, fighting pressure to conform. And you know, it's such a, when she's dancing and then her whole family gets up and dances with her, that support of being an individual, it's such a, to me, it's such a triumph. My parents hated the movie and they thought it was twisted.
They were setting up that poor little girl.
Oh, I thought it was,
but I guess, I mean, it rang true for everybody, right? It rang true, the, you know, what was happening in the movie rang true.
To some degree. I mean, that fight for independence.
All right. We are talking about how film portrays mental health conditions. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about how film portrays mental health conditions with film critic Tim Miller, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we have Nate, who's giving us a call from Orleans. Hi, Nate.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah,
I'm listening with interest because I'm a filmmaker and I'm also interested in mental health, of course. I was wondering what you all thought about the film The Joker, and then there's the recent sequel. Mm-hmm. The Joker is quite an anti-hero, and I thought it was, compared to other superhero movies, it's kind of, I would say, more of a realistic take on it. I wonder what you all thought about that.
Nate, thanks for the question. It's a good one. I've not seen it. I've seen the clips for it. It looks very dark to me. I don't. Have either of you seen it, Mark or Jonathan? No.
The first one. I haven't seen the second. But yes, it is dark, but it's very engaging, and it makes you frightened, basically. Mm-hmm.
He looks like a scary guy.
And you know, the acting portrayal is terrific, in terms of any kind of message that it sends, I guess it's, again, it's untreated mental illness. When it's untreated, can be dangerous. It's an engaging film, and I would recommend it.
Yeah, what about you, Tim? What'd you
I've think? Seen both of them, and I know the sequel's gotten terrible reviews, but I liked it.
You like the dark films.
I do like
films.
Dark, but I agree, though. I think that, and it's interesting because, you know, the, you know, first of all, as Nate, the caller, said, you know, this is, you know, we're so used to, I mean, the Joker, I grew up reading Batman comics, and the Joker was this flat, you know, a great villain, but pretty flat. You didn't really know much of a backstory or that. And the way it's portrayed here makes you think, yeah, you know, these villains, this comes from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I never thought of it as directly as yeah, this is untreated mental illness, but that is what it is. Right. And
the Penguin, untreated mental illness, right?
Yeah. I think both. I think it's great. And Joaquin Phoenix is so, so good in it. And
yeah,
actually,
he's a great actor. Yeah.
Lady Gaga is great.
Gaga's in it?
She said, here's the thing about the sequel, and this is one reason why I kind of love it. It's a musical.
What?
It's a musical. I mean, talk about daring.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's like, and maybe that's why, you know, because it's taken such a big chance that it's getting such terrible reviews, that might not have helped. But I thought it was bold and compelling.
I want to talk about a couple of movies that portray narcissistic personalities. And one that I loved, The Devil Wears Prada. I loved that movie. That's Meryl Streep as a demanding and narcissistic fashion magazine editor. What did you guys think about that? Did she play it right? I mean, did that show narcissism as it would be in real life?
Absolutely.
You know, yes. I mean, again, you really live the experience of the people she was interacting with.
Yeah, she's never wrong.
Never wrong. And
never says she's sorry.
So the reason I looked this up, because we're in the season of dealing with narcissistic personality in our politics. And I thought that, you know, what movies can teach us a little bit about it? And certainly Devil Wears Prada is one of them. Then there's others that are more destructive, like Mommy Dearest, basically, again, a robbing of a person's personhood. And Gaslight, that's an old one from 1944. That's where we get that phrase, gaslighting. But there was a very disturbed, controlling husband who gaslighted his wife into thinking she was crazy. Into her thinking she was crazy. And that's how he controlled her.
Going back to Mommy Dearest for a minute, Joan Crawford, that film portrays this abusive and narcissistic behavior. Is it more than narcissism there, though? It seemed like she was suffering from more than just being narcissistic.
Right. There is. There's some other, you know, other kind of personality disorders there, too. Probably borderline personality disorder. A lot of times they go together, one makes the other more intense. The absolute lack of empathy and the inability to see the other person's experience brings home how destructive narcissistic people can be.
Mm-hmm.
Without setting out to be destructive, they don't appreciate that they're destructive. Mm-hmm. It's just not an observation. It's not like, when they walk, they can pay attention to their right foot going forward. They don't have the possibility of paying attention to.
So they really believe they are right.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Regardless of facts to show otherwise, or they don't even consider those facts to show otherwise. As soon as those facts, you confront them with some of those facts, they're metabolizing it into a defense about why you're wrong, or you're offline, you're crazy, you're aggressive. They're really impossible to deal with. In any kind of reasonable way. Other ones, if people want to be entertained by these people, House of Cards, if you remember that series.
I did not see that.
Oh, yeah, that's what, yeah. With Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, right.
Kevin Spacey.
Can I ask you a question about what you were just talking about as far as narcissism, though? And boy, that's certainly, I think we can see certain signs of that in the world these days, the narcissism. But I'm wondering, what would attract people to somebody that displays signs of narcissism? Like what, where they...
Why aren't you running in the other direction?
Instead of running toward it and embracing
that's
it.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's to be found in narcissistic people who seem certain and powerful. And they don't entertain doubt. They give a direction that if you identify with, you become part of their sunshine, really. In other words, give you a warm feeling by joining them, a safe feeling, I guess, is the main thing. They provide a sense of safety, even though they're irrational in many ways. I think that's it. And Trump has a following that are very much dedicated to him.
Boy, I think you've just answered a question many people have been asking.
I want to talk about a movie, and I don't think you've seen it, Mark, but Jonathan, you have. We've seen it, Inside Out. This is a kids movie. It's animated. It's about a little girl named Riley. She's a happy, hockey-loving 11-year-old Midwestern girl, but her world turns upside down when she and her parents move to San Francisco. Riley's emotions, led by joy in her brain, try to guide her through this difficult, life-changing event. However, the stress of the move brings sadness. When joy and sadness are inadvertently swept into the far reaches of Riley's mind, the only emotions left in headquarters are anger, fear, and disgust. So this is like, I love this movie because it kind of, and it's for kids, it explains the role of emotions and you know, what you might be feeling. Jonathan, what did you think about it? You saw the first one, right?
I have to tell you, Mindy, that we were talking about this, of course, before we went on the air, and I realized that I was actually thinking of a different movie
I had seen.
So I haven't seen it.
So neither one, both of you have to see this. What did you think about it, Tim? I love that movie.
Yeah, I actually like, I'm one of the few people probably that like the sequel more than
I haven't seen the sequel yet.
The sequel is more, you know, the teenage. Yeah, so it's funny how it's like all bets are off. We're starting all over again. Yeah. She's a teenage girl.
There was a clip in there that I loved where I don't remember what they're talking about school. And you're seeing inside all their brains. So mom's brain is like, be subtle. Yeah. And then she goes out, how was school today? And then whatever the snarky answer Riley gives, then dad goes, watch your attitude, young lady. And then you see the little red guy in Riley's brain go, attitude, I'll give you attitude.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know. It's this great little story. It talks about how we cope, how our emotions help us get through all
help
of these changes.
Or how they can kind of control how we behave. Yeah. You know, if we let our emotions completely rule us and not, you know.
Yeah, definitely worth
checking it's out. Very, very, very thoughtful and probably why it received so much acclaim.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that mechanism has been picked up by neuroscientists, actually, when they describe aspects of consciousness as a committee. Committee meeting
in
terms of making decisions. So that's a valid model of the mind.
Another film that I see listed a lot on the best portrayal films is Girl Interrupted. That's a little bit, it's been a while since I've seen it. 1999, it's an older movie. Winona Ryder, Angelina Jolie, and what they and this is about some girls who are institutionalized, and the I guess the pros in this movie they were saying is with Winona Ryder's character showing how she can help in her own her own road to recovery. It gives you hope and you know, inspiration. Not so sure about Angelina Jolie's character, but in that movie we're seeing what, antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder. Thoughts on that movie? Good portrayal.
Good portrayals of those conditions, definitely. And you can see how intrusive, especially a borderline personality, can be. How intrusive they can be on your own mental real estate, how they can kind of take over your thinking. I noticed this when I started, being a psychiatrist and working with them. On weekends, I would find myself fantasizing about the drama, the intensity, of what was going on in their lives. And that's the way they interact, with a very poor concept of boundaries and their own sense of themselves. And this is what was portrayed in a movie. I mean, you kind of got taken in, taken over, taken in by the intensity of the emotional reactivity especially the Winona Ryder character. The other one was a little bit more aggressive and angry and destructive.
Right, exactly. I was thinking of films that portray obsessive compulsive disorder, and look at what it was. Black Swan was OCD, schizophrenia, dissociative disorder, borderline, a lot going on in Black Swan. I did not see that film. But when I think of an OCD movie, I think of Jack Nicholson in As Good As It Gets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's so funny, Jack Nicholson portray, you wonder, as an actor, like, what is his process to be able to portray these characters so well, right? Yeah. But As Good As It Gets has had a lot going on there. What did you think about that movie?
I thought that was quite a nice portrayal. Really, it was. Some people might who are not really terribly familiar with OCD might see it as almost hamming it up, but it really was not excessive at all with respect to the compulsions and the acts that he portrayed. Mm-hmm. I thought it was quite well done.
Yeah, I did so.
Yeah. What did you think about it, Tim?
Oh, I thought, as a movie, I thought it was great. It's interesting to hear that it was realistic. I'm glad to hear that. It's good for the movie. And is it exhausting to have OCD?
I would
for the person
so.
because they have to keep checking things and.
And I do need to make a plug right here that TMS, which everybody knows is one of my favorite treatments, is approved by the FDA for OCD. And it's probably even more effective for OCD in our experience so far than it is for depression. Right. So people who have OCD, who have tried medications that have not worked, should look into having TMS.
And with OCD, it's like a lot of things. There's a spectrum, right? I mean, I think his character in As Good As It Gets would be a little bit more, would impact his daily life a little more than some others, right? I mean, there's a spectrum be on.
Well, there is a spectrum, but it's quite common for people to describe themselves or the people around them as having OCD because they have what we might call traits, where they tend to be somewhat obsessive, they tend to be somewhat compulsive, but the way that Jack Nicholson portrayed that in the movie is not unusual among people who seek help for OCD. It was really not as severe. I mean, it was. Pretty dramatic and profound, and certainly interfered with his ability to function day to day to some degree, for sure. But that's not unusual to see in people who are helping.
What about his grumpy attitude? Would that just be his personality, or is that something that's common with that as well? Because he was pretty much a grump.
You know, I think that's Jack Nicholson.
Actually, he's portraying the irritability because his mind is split all the time with what's really happening and what people are dealing with and what he should be dealing with and what's going on in his mind, which is racing on thoughts about danger and need to prevent some imagined disaster. So, you know, he's not all there, basically. When you intrude on that with something that's realistic, like what do you want for dinner, he gets irritated.
What he portrays is largely a contamination fear. Mm-hmm. And that is among the most common, certainly the most common distortions or symptoms of people who have OCD. But there are plenty of people who have OCD for whom the germ concern is not primary. Mm-hmm. It's not at all. And it's among the more common, but it's certainly not required that a person have that sort of fear in order to have OCD.
Sure. Lots we can learn from all of these movies. And as we said in the beginning, so give us some empathy and connection and inspiration and hope. Third Wednesday of the month is always our discussion on mental health issues. Psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, psychiatrist Mark Whaley, and film critic Tim Miller. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.